What we're gonna do right here is go back. Way back. Back into time.
Now here's what I want you all to do for me.
Bang! Caught you looking for the same thing. It's a new thing. Check out this I bring.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 106. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, buddy?
Horrible. I've run out of coffee. I mismanaged my caffeine supply during the week, and I woke up this morning and realized I have a podcast and I have no caffeine. So,
how do you run out of coffee, man? Just Amazon, they'll bring it right to your door.
One-hour delivery. Let's see if they can make it by the end of the show. So,
hey, do you guys have one-hour delivery in Houston?
Yes, we do.
Ugh. That's nice. Very nice. I'll just fly it in on a drone and bring it right to you while we're recording this podcast.
I should probably get rid of the windscreens on the second floor then, now that I think about it. So
that's quite a visual. Just a drone delivering coffee as we start the podcast.
Flying into my, you know, we may have to get some B-stock footage and video edit, like a drone flying in behind me or something.
I like it. I like it. Well, John, we talked about the idea of this next podcast, maybe doing something a little different, going back a little bit, back to the basics, talking about some of the things that you should just understand, whether it's vSphere, but also how it pertains to vSAN, some of the settings. And the guy that we're bringing on to join us in this conversation is Mr. Jeff Hunter. He's one of the vSAN experts at VMware. Probably most folks know him from all the content that he's written. But Jeff, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Pete. Good to be here, man. I'm just having some coffee, John. Really good.
Yeah. Rub it in his face. We'll hold up our coffees together.
Not cool. Not cool, guys.
Yeah, John, as I said, man, you know, since we need a theme for this one, we're going back, man.
What we're going to do right here is go back. Way back. Back into time.
John's like, what is this strange music? You don't know anything about that, do you?
It's a new thing.
See, I know Jeff would know that because I don't even know if you know this, John, but Jeff used to be a DJ. Did you know that?
Yeah. I know about DJ Jeff.
Yeah, DJ Jazzy Jeff. He used to like scratch and, you know, and totally hook up. You know, you go to a wedding and Jeff's playing and he's over there just on the turntable. He shared this.
I pick up this VMware stuff with a little extra cash on the side.
Yeah. This is your side gig as a. Yeah, we need to get a picture of you with like the one headphone, you know, holding it and scratching. Maybe for the podcast, we can get one of those for you.
Yeah, there you go. I got a turntable sitting back here, believe it or not.
Very nice. Well, Jeff, thanks for joining us. John, like I said, John and I were talking about the idea of looking into what some of the settings are inside of vSAN and also vSphere, just some of the core settings that most people, if you've been in the business for a long time, you probably overlook, but sometimes these settings change over the versions. And then some other folks just might have curiosity as to what is the most ideal setting for these particular vSphere settings. And so I'm going to start doing that. Something a little different this time. I'm actually going to create a video for this. And so we'll walk through some of these settings and we'll share that on YouTube as well. But for the folks that are listening, you know, of course it'll make sense as well because we're still going to discuss these topics. So, obviously the H5 client is beautiful. We all love that. But John, some of the settings we wanted to talk about, right, were more around high availability, for example. So let me jump over to configure and then services. We've got DRS and vSphere ability. Now this is my lab, right? It's a nested lab. So don't judge me if you see warnings or something not supported. This is just a nested environment. I've got a lot of stuff disabled. But what do you think? vSphere, let's start with vSphere availability. Jeff, tell us a little bit about, you know, what vSphere ability is, and maybe because we've definitely get the questions from time to time, do you need vSphere ability when you're using vSAN? Because vSAN also has data availability. So is there a difference? And if so, what?
Yeah, certainly, Pete. So vSphere availability, otherwise known as vSphere HA back in the day, that's the piece that takes care of the compute aspects of it, right? So if you lose a host and you need to reboot those virtual machines on other hosts that are still healthy in the cluster, that's where vSphere availability availability comes into play there. vSAN obviously takes care of making sure that the data is available from a storage perspective, but then HA is the piece that handles the compute part.
Okay, so, you know, just to recap a little bit, but so HA, when we're talking about vSphere high availability, we're talking about the compute, right? So if a host has, you know, for example, let me look. I'll click on a host here, my first host, see what VMs I have on there. I've got one VM on this host. So the VM is called VM07. So the compute for that host is sitting on, the compute for that VM is sitting on this host. And so vSphere HA manages whether or not if this host is not available, then this specific VM will then get restarted on a different host, correct?
Yeah, that's exactly it. There is an agent that runs on each one of the hosts that they talk to each other, right? They talk to each other normally over the management network, but with vSAN enabled, they actually talk over the vSAN network. So that's something else we can dig into just a little bit as well. But to answer your question there, what happens then is when that agent goes missing, so the host is offline for X amount of seconds, vSphere HA will kick in, and any VMs that were running on that host that just failed are rebooted on other hosts in the cluster. And the beauty of this is it works without vCenter being online. A lot of folks will ask, hey, does vCenter have to be there in order for this to work? Because you know, most folks run vCenter on their vSphere cluster. So if the host running, you know, vCenter goes down, then how would that work? Well, the answer is it's simple. Since the agents are running on each of the hosts there, they handle all of that failover and recovery all by themselves without the need vCenter. You need vCenter to do configuration, but when it comes to actual failover capabilities, all of that is done at the host level. So that is the beauty of it there. The host will automatically reboot any VMs that went down, and you're back up within a couple of minutes in most cases.
So we're talking HCI, and obviously I don't see any data components here. I just see my compute. So how would I know what is on this host, what components and what objects, like what my vSAN data, how do I know what's on that host?
You can certainly browse for that information. So if you would go to vSAN cluster on the navigation pane there,
and
you could go to monitor and go down toward the bottom where it says virtual objects.
Yep. So virtual objects.
And then at that point, you could select, let's just say the top one there. So you've got VM01, you could put a checkbox in hard disk number one.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could do that too. You could select all of them. That works.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there you can see where the data actually sits for each of those. And the good news here, though, is we don't have to keep track of that. vSAN handles that for us.
Yep.
There's no need to worry about where vSAN puts the data from an HA perspective. So this is just more of an FYI type of thing in most cases. You don't necessarily have to look at this or configure anything. Just let vSAN handle the failover when a host does go down that contains some of the components that might belong to that VM. That's why the default vSAN storage policy calls for failures to tolerate equals one, so it keeps a copy of the data on two different hosts. That way, if we lose one, we still have access to the data from the other host.
Yeah, I guess you can see it. It's nice to see it. And I guess where it might make sense is like, hey, I want to put this host in maintenance mode. So if I was to go over here to this host and say, hey, I want to go to maintenance mode on this host, this is where things change with vSAN, and it'll actually give me an example of what's on this host, right? Like this will say, hey, if you do, you know, here's what's going to happen with these specific hosts based on the policy that they have. So this is a place to really, this is where, you know, you don't have to search for this information. If you try to put a host in maintenance mode, it's going to show you exactly which components are on there, and then you get options, right?
Yeah, exactly. And again, in most cases, the default setting there, ensure accessibility, gives you a good balance of getting into maintenance mode fairly quick while at the same time making sure that the data remains available. So if vSAN does have to migrate a little bit of data here or there, it will do that to ensure the availability of that particular object, so a virtual machine hard disk, for example.
Yeah.
But there's no need to migrate all of the data off, again, because we keep multiple copies. Now,
sure.
The exception to that might be if you're going to be doing longer-term maintenance. You might decide to evacuate all of the data off of that and change that default setting of ensure accessibility. But like I said, in most cases, when you're just doing a host reboot or a quick patch or something like that, anything that's less than an hour or so, the default settings. And again, you don't have to worry about it much as a vSAN administrator and a vSphere administrator. Just let the platform do what it does best.
I like it.
So we talked about obviously vSphere HA as a construct, but there's another HA that I actually just, the question came up this week, is VMHA. Which here in the H5, this is shown under the guess not heart beating response. And then there was kind of a, used to be an old thing that did some application heart monitoring also, the old app HA.
Yep.
If you remember that back in the day. That's, you know, can you explain what that is?
Yeah, so there's a couple things that looks at there. It uses VMware tools, or VM tools, I should say, and it pays attention to whether it's getting heartbeats from VM tools. And if we're not getting a heartbeat, and you have this configured to you know, restart the VM in this case, then, for example, let's say a Windows blue screen, right? Classic example there. That's where VM tools would not be responding. vSphere HA would be able to detect that if it's enabled and then reboot that virtual machine in place. It's not going to reboot it on another host. It's just going to restart the VM in place.
Okay, that makes sense.
And if you dig into the advanced settings, by default, it's only going to try to basically, you know, do CPR on this VM, I think, 3 times by default, and then a hold down timer triggers. And just some anecdotal advice I have is this is something that I generally don't turn on unless I have a couple virtual machines that are known to crash or purple screen or cause problems. The reason for that being is there are situations where if you had some type of intermittent issue, someone pushes a bad patch that hangs an OS temporarily, you can get a false positive and basically trigger a boot storm within applications. There's a reason this is off by default, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, for sure. So what about host isolation? Is the guidance on host isolation the same for vSAN as it would be for any environment?
That's kind of an it depends sort of scenario there. Depends on the configuration that you have. Depends on whether you have other storage in the environment and so forth. I think it makes sense to back up just a little bit and cover something we mentioned earlier.
Okay.
And that's the fact that vSphere HA uses the same network as vSAN. So in other words, the vSAN network, when you have HA and vSAN turned on in the cluster. Now, when it comes to host isolation addresses, the key thing to point out here is the reason for that to begin with. First of all, if a host gets isolated in the environment, chances are the VMs on that host do not have access to external resources. The other thing that might go wrong, depending on, again, the isolation that's happening, whether it's many hosts or one host by itself, is the fact that we may not have quorum for the data that is on vSAN. So what we get is a topology for at both the vSphere HA and the vSAN level. Those two see the same topology, so they have a much better chance of figuring out specifically if a host is isolated and respond accordingly. So that takes us to the host isolation addresses. What that normally is the default gateway on the management network. But again, since HA is using the vSAN network, it's not going to change. So in some cases, we might want to change that host isolation address. So hopefully that makes sense as to, you know, it depends type of scenario. Now, the piece you're pointing at there, the response for host isolation, so in other words, once we've figured out that a host is truly isolated, is what do we do with the virtual machines that are on that host? Because just because a host is isolated doesn't mean that it's powered down. What we could run into is a situation where the host is isolated, both from a vSAN and a standard network perspective, and you get what we call zombie VMs, in other words, those VMs are still running from a compute perspective, you know, CPU and memory and such on the host, but they no longer have access to storage and they're not able to write to their drives and so forth. So they continue to run for a while. In some cases, they'll crash or whatever. But in that point, vSphere HA is not going to restart that virtual machine. So we have that setting there where if a host is deemed that it's isolated, we can change that to power off and restart VMs, that middle option there on your menu, Pete.
Okay.
And that will avoid that zombie VM situation where we could potentially have two of the exact same virtual machines running on different hosts, but only one having access to storage. That's going to help alleviate that particular issue when we set it there. So in most cases in a vSAN environment, that's probably the setting you're going to want to go with there from a best practices perspective, is that power off and restart.
So the one real exception case that comes to mind is a two-node cluster. Just because the hosts themselves cannot properly, the HA fencing doesn't do anything at that point. There's no way for them to play paper, rock, scissors and figure out who has quorum. And rather than use an isolation address here, you rely on vSAN actually as a built-in mechanism that will kill VMs that are zombie in this situation. And I think this also carries into stretch clustering, if I'm not mistaken. So in this case, you would actually set the isolation response to do nothing and then let vSAN do the murdering of the zombie VMs.
Yeah, with a two node, chances are that's going to be directly connected, right? So there's no switching or routing that's going on between those hosts.
Yeah, you can't do an isolation address on a point to point connection.
Exactly. Now, with stretch clusters, though, there is a best practice in place there where we can set the isolation addresses for that. Again, by default, they're set to the default gateway of the management network, and there's only one set. in a cluster. So a stretch cluster is a single cluster. So it's going to point to just one default gateway. The better way to go with that is to actually define isolation addresses. So you can do this. It's an advanced setting in vSphere HA, and you would define an IP address or whatever the case might be, one at each site. So that way, vSAN and vSphere HA have a much better chance to determine if a host is truly isolated or not by pinging those isolation addresses at both of the sites of the stretch cluster.
So that way, just a loss of connectivity between the sites doesn't trigger one site to think they've all gone isolated when they could still be the primary quorum holder, so or the preferred site.
I like it. Well, I appreciate these tips so I can get my lab environment completely top-notch here. So what else do I need to consider?
So we've talked about quorum here from an IP basis. What about storage networks? Taking a step back to people who, you know, maybe they have things other than vSAN and environment. What do we do? How do we protect ourselves from the network going down and triggering isolation, but the fiber channel fabric or the discrete IP storage network that was separate staying up?
So, John, I take it you're talking about the HA heartbeat data stores that come out. I don't know. We were talking about that a little bit offline earlier. I think 5.0 or something like that is when those come into play. Maybe even before that, I forget.
Yeah, they're pretty old. It was a great feature though in the day when, you know, my back when, you know, Ethernet was run by gerbils and, you know, Fiber Channel was the real man's raw network that would actually stay online. So
now that was a great feature that they added there. So that way we had a couple of ways of testing whether a host was truly isolated or not. So the HA heartbeat data stores just allowed us to communicate across the storage network in addition to communicating across the management network when it comes to vSphere HA, for example. So again, we could get rid of those false positives in most cases. Now with vSAN, that changes things a little bit because it kind of depends on whether you have other data stores in your environment. I know a lot of vSAN data stores, vSAN is the only data store for that particular cluster.
Right.
So there is no heartbeat data store in that particular case. Now, you can certainly configure those if you do have other data store types, MFS or whatever the case might be. But with vSAN, it's not a necessity to configure that. You can actually turn it off if you want to. And you're looking at the cluster settings right there where you can do that. You would pick that center option, use data store only from the specified list, and then you would leave that list empty. So that's what you would most likely do in a vSAN environment. But again, if you have other data stores, it doesn't hurt to configure heartbeat data stores again to help improve the efficiency and the accuracy of HA determining if there is truly an isolation event.
And remember, if you were decommissioning data stores, you will have to remove them from being the HA data stores. And it will tell you when you go, say, delete the MFS partition, and you know you're removing those data stores from a host, you'll actually, part of the in-flight health checks will say, hey, this is an HA data store, I'm sorry, I can't do that, Dave. So but you will notice there's actually a little folder called VMHA, and there's these little files that are being updated, and so that way on top of the VMFS, you know, locking and things like that, you can use the storage for quorum.
So there's no issue if I have an environment that has VMFS as well that's using the HA heartbeat data stores, but then I'm also using vSAN that doesn't require them. So there's no conflict, right? They can coexist.
Yep, correct.
Good to know. All right, gents, what else do I need to tweak in my lab as it pertains to HA and vSAN?
We haven't talked about admission control.
Ah, you're right.
Yeah, so the thing with admission control, and I've seen this more than once, folks will turn this off in some cases, especially in smaller clusters. They might be trying to provision some virtual machines and they're starting to run low on capacity. Admission control will kick in and say, nope, you can't provision any longer. So the administrator, not knowing any better, will go in there and turn admission control off and go ahead and provision those extra VMs. But the problem is we're eating into that reserved capacity from a compute perspective that vSphere HA sets aside for recovering virtual machines. So I guess a classic example would be a 4-node cluster. What would happen there is we would traditionally keep either one host or maybe 25% of the resources. We've updated the defaults to use percentages now, which is a good thing.
Oh, thank God.
Anyway, you would keep 25% of those aside. So that way, if we lost one of the hosts in the environment, we guarantee that there are enough compute resources remaining on those other three hosts to run all of the virtual machines in the environment. So that's a good thing to have there. I recommend you don't turn that off. Keep admission control on. If you need more capacity from a compute standpoint, then you need to provision additional hosts out there. Make sure you have enough compute capacity to handle those failures when they do happen. Now, when it comes to vSAN, what you want to keep in mind there is you want to kind of sync up the failures to tolerate settings and the admission control settings. And you'll want the admission control setting to be set to equal or less than the number of failures to tolerate that's used in the environment. As an example, let's talk about failures to tolerate equals 2. This is a common example that that I've seen out on the internet in a few different blog posts, but it illustrates it pretty nicely. If you have an 8-node vSAN cluster, and FTT is set to 2, so we're talking about vSAN here. We can tolerate up to 2 host failures from a vSAN perspective.
Yeah.
We'll want to make sure that we also set vSphere HA to no more than the same number of failures to tolerate. So in other words, 8 nodes, we would set that to 25%, which is basically two nodes worth of compute capacity in that cluster. You could also set it to something lower than that. What you don't want to do is set it to something higher than that, because then you start running into situations where you're really reserving too much compute capacity. You know, if there's a failure, more than 2 failures at a vSAN level, the challenge there is it doesn't matter compute-wise. If you no longer have quorum for your objects on vSAN, then it doesn't matter if the VMs can run or not at the compute level. So again, just to summarize, the rule of thumb, best rule of thumb or best practice, whatever you want to call it there, is sync up your failures to tolerate and your host failures cluster tolerates section or setting, I should say, that you're showing there on the screen, or set it to something a little bit less than that. So if you've got FTT equals 2, set the HA setting to 2 or 1 hosts or 25% or less, and then that 8-node cluster as an example.
The other option, though, is going beyond the host or basis. There's also the new slot policy. If you click on the cluster resource percentage, you also have, so going through this, you've obviously the resource percentage, which is, been around, known well, and we've loved and done that. Obviously, if you're going to be overcommitting resources, then we kind of end up disabling this. So if you've got a test dev or a VDI or some type of environment where you know that you can get away with overcommitting and VM pools and claw that back. But the other option you have also is slot policy. And so what this does is if you think about having monster VMs, if you've got a bunch of VMs that are using, 100 gigs of RAM or, 200 gigs of RAM, just because there's resources in the cluster doesn't mean there's necessarily going to be resources all, in one place or in the right places to handle a failover. So yeah, this can help do some more advanced calculations in terms of making sure that stuff will be able to fail over. This, again, comes in really handy. If you've got lots of small VMs, this isn't a big deal. The percentage is definitely going to cover you, so to speak. But if you start running those really big jumbo VMs and things like that, then this will make sure that there's slots for that. And then there's also this ability to basically tune the performance degradation at the bottom of what you're willing to tolerate. And sometimes even a small amount here, just based on the size of the memory and the size of the host, if there's not kind of an even mapping, sometimes tuning that by 10% down or something, being able to tolerate a minor hit can give you quite a bit more. But for those people running like SAP HANA or something with, giant memory sucking VMs, this can be kind of handy.
Very cool.
Yeah, John, that was actually the default back in the day, right? We used to use that number of hosts, I think was the name of the setting, and it used the slot sizes. That was the default before we changed it to percentage. And you're right, that can either be more advanced, or if you don't have a wide fluctuation in the size of the virtual machines out there, that might be an easier way to match up to the number of failures to tolerate with vSAN, right? So you could use that slot option like Pete was showing there just a moment ago, and you can just specify the number of hosts. So if I've got FTT equals 2 in my cluster, I would set the slot-based option to 2 as well to keep them in sync, and then forget about it. No need to do math and figure out percentages and all that stuff.
Well, and I love the percent just because realistically, there's enough. The compute's always a lot more variable in most environments, and most people, even though they provision 4 cores, they don't need 4 cores. They've provisioned 64 gigs of RAM for that database because your DBA demanded it. If you look at, you could balloon for days against that VM because it doesn't really do anything. That's going to be, there's quite a bit of room there. There is that option for dedicated hosts also, where that one comes in as primarily licensing or regulatory compliance. If you need to make sure that VMs run on specific hosts, so maybe you've got a mixed Microsoft SQL and Oracle cluster, and hosts 1 through 4, you run Microsoft SQL, hosts 5 through 8, you run Oracle, and then host 9 is a failover. So that way you only have to license each application stack for 5 hosts in that cluster, and you can share a dedicated failover host. That's been the weird use case for that, reserving a specific host for HA. But yeah, getting back to why we don't do that by default is you're going to hit that host pretty hard, and you'd rather the boot storm and the CPU and the memory burst and the disk burst across it be scattered across the host than go to one host. But for, if you've got $100,000 worth of licensing just to boot on a host, then that may become an option.
Yeah, I agree. The other place you might use that fixed host option too is if you have a cluster that does not have consistent configuration across the board. Maybe you have hosts that are different sizes, more memory in some than the other. In that particular case, you would want to select a specific host that has the most resources in it as opposed to the least. So that's another option. We've seen that. But again, that kind of goes against best practices too. You should always design your clusters so they are fairly consistent from a host and storage configuration.
Agreed.
Yeah, it was always weird when I'd run into a cluster and like, okay, host 1 through 3 have 32 gigs of RAM. Host 4 has 256. What happens when host 4 fails?
Exactly.
let's make this the dedicated failover.
Awesome. Well, we did get some questions that came in as well. So I want to save some time for those towards the end of this conversation. I also want to talk a little bit about if you're doing some of these configurations, how you can actually do them in vSAN with what we call Quick Start. But before we go into that, John, anything else around this area of the vSphere configuration you think we should touch on before we dive into some demos that we have?
I think we've covered this before in conversations with, I think it was Deniman or Duncan, but proactive HA is something that is obviously off by default here, but you know, that might be, it's the edit below, actually. You need to go back.
Yeah, I always hit the wrong one. There we go.
Yeah. So let's turn this on. And actually, this probably isn't going to work in a nested environment just because the hardware providers for monitoring. So what this does is this actually monitors the hardware health. And so let's say all the fans die in host one. We can basically have, you know, if you start having degradations and it looks like a host is starting to fail or bad things are happening to it,
yeah,
we can throw it into quarantine mode. And basically that means DRS is going to eject get the VMs out of there before it gets worse. Because what you really don't want is a host that it's overheating, it's running slow, but it's not quite dead yet, you know, to borrow the Monty Python statement. And in that case, the VMs start running terribly, but they don't actually fail. And so that's really your worst case, is that non-binary failure mode where you've got a host that's crippled, there's problems with it, but stuff's still on it. And so you can basically have this help eject VMs from hosts. And that's probably a feature that deserves its own episode deep dive.
Yeah, you're right. So what do you think I should do, John? Should I make my proactive HA automated? And then for the remediation, should I keep it in quarantine mode?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good one there.
Sweet. All right. All cleaned up. I'm now automated.
Now the maintenance mode, There's pros and cons to doing that one, just to think about it, because maintenance mode actually has implications on vSAN. Quarantine's just going to eject the VMs off. Maintenance mode is going to trigger the vSAN response for maintenance mode. And so that's going to do maintain availability by default. Now, there could be cases where if the whole data center starts overheating, so like let's say your primary concern is all the hosts are probably going to become unhealthy at the same time, that default of just getting compute off and not starting to send storage flying around is probably safe. If you have the most well-maintained data center on Earth and you're more worried about individual host components are the most likely problem, then maybe the maintenance mode might be worth it.
Fair point. All right, so cool. I think that's a good start, and we can probably continue more of this on future episodes. I like the idea of walking through some of these settings because we definitely get enough questions about it. So, Jeff, let's talk a little bit. I know there, like, one of the things that you can do when you're setting up your cluster for vSAN, you can either do it manually, which is not too, you know, terribly difficult, but it certainly is streamlined using something like Quick Start, which is available in vSAN 6.7 and forward. So I'd love to see that, and maybe you can show us by going to Storage Hub, because I love the fact that anybody, even if you don't have vSAN or if you don't want to mess with this on your live environment, we have this really cool thing on Storage Hub called, do we call them offline demos? What do we call it? Oh, click-through demos. Yeah, so we have these click-through demos, which essentially is an environment. It's offline, so you can essentially go through it. It even gives you a guide and shows you how to do certain things and what it would look like. So whether you're just trying to see proof of concept, how it would work, or if you want to see what it would look like before you actually do it on your environment, I think these are really helpful. And they've got some, you know, really cool guides to show you exactly how to do it. So Jeff, maybe you can queue up one of those, like the Quick Start. And while you're doing that, I'd love to throw some questions out that came for this episode. One of them came from a gentleman by the name of Bilal Ahmed. And Bilal was asking a couple of questions around upgrading and patching, right? It was a generic question about, like, how do you handle upgrading and patching? But there's even a click-through demo on that called upgrading your vSAN cluster with VUM, which is fully integrated. And so you can do that. And it's an automated process. Take a look at that video and you can see how it's completely non-disruptive, how you can use your own baseline, like if you have a, you use custom ISOs if you want, or you can accept the baseline that comes down from the recommended, from the vSAN recommendations, which is really handy. Yeah, so that's essentially on the updating part. But Jeff, why don't you show us the quick start part and then we'll answer some of these other questions around rebuilds and how that works and how you can force it. I think that was another question we wanted to address. But let's go ahead and take a look at one of these demos.
Yeah, certainly, Pete, you're right. These click-through demos are great. You don't have to have a lab environment set up or anything. You just really navigate to storagehub.vmware.com, where we have a lot of white papers and tech notes and so forth. That's also where we have these demos. So I click on VMware vSAN, and then I can scroll down just a little bit here. There's learn and evaluate. You can see some of the other stuff that we have there as well. And then down here in the corner, VMware vSAN demonstrations. There's actually quite a few of them out here. As you can see, some are generic. So you can see these generic ones. It doesn't matter too much what version you're running. And we have more version-specific demos. Now, the one you mentioned is Cluster Quick Start in vSAN 6.7. So let's go ahead and just pull that one up. And there's what the click-through demo looks like. And it's kind of cool because it's a kind of a short hands-on lab at the same time. Not only is it a demo, but you can spend a little bit of time learning about it. We write the text and stuff over here on the right-hand side. So you can walk through that and actually learn about, as opposed to just clicking on stuff. You can actually understand what the implication of that particular click and so forth is. So what I'll do is I'll go ahead and close that just to kind of give us the best view, I suppose, of the UI here. And with Cluster Quick Start, the purpose behind this is basically what you mentioned, Pete. There's a manual process that you could follow. So you could go through and you could configure the networking and VM kernel ports and vSAN and disk groups and all that kind of stuff on a per host basis. Or you can use Cluster Quick Start if you have the latest version of vSAN here. So there's basically three steps to it. The first step is cluster basics. So we'll go ahead and hit edit. And this is pretty self-explanatory. This is where you turn on the various cluster level services that are available out there. So DRS, for example, we want to enable that. vSphere HA, we've talked about that quite a bit already. So let's certainly enable that to make sure our VMs restart automatically. And of course, this is where we can also enable vSAN. So at that point, three simple clicks there. We've gotten through the first step. We hit OK, and we can see that those services are selected. At this point now, we need to add some hosts. So I'm going to click Add, and it makes it very simple to add by IP address or fully qualified domain name. Nice thing about these click-throughs, too, is you can get past the monotonous stuff of, you know, typing numbers and so forth in just by clicking on the orange box. There we go. So you click on the orange box, and it's just going to pre-populate it for us. That's a nice thing. Hit username, password, same type of thing. I'm going to go ahead and add another host down here. This is kind of cool, too, in Cluster Quick Start. I get tired of typing usernames and passwords, so we can just enable that checkbox, and it's going to fill all of that stuff in. That is, of course, assuming that you're using the same root password on each of your hosts. And then we'll add one more host just to make sure we have enough for a three-node vSAN cluster. Hit next. There's our three hosts. We can see we're running ESX version 6.7. Hit next again. A little summary. We'll hit finish. And now what happens is we run through a bunch of checks to verify all kinds of different things, right? Making sure that there is time synchronization across the board. That's a key thing too, by the way. I mean, I cannot harp enough on time synchronization in an environment. That's just as important as DNS these days. I was setting up Realize automation this week, playing around with that a little bit and having some issues. And sure enough, I was a few minutes off in my time configuration across the cluster and VRA and everything. And as soon as I synced that up, everything started working. So again, don't underestimate little things like time and DNS and just making sure that stuff is in sync across the board here. So let's scroll down and there we can see a few more things. Firmware and so forth is all up to date. Let's hit configure. And now this is where we walk through. Instead of doing this on a per host basis, we're actually going to set the configuration for all of the hosts at the same time. So you see we can configure network setting later if it makes sense. In this case, we're going to go ahead and do that though. Number of distributed switches is set to 1. Scroll down a little bit. We can see we have a vMotion port group and also a vSAN port group that is going to be set up for us. There's our physical adapters. So let's go ahead and get a couple of physical adapters and add to this distributed switch on each host. I'll hit next. Here we can see the information there. In this particular demo, we kept it simple. So we're just going to leave it at DHCP. But of course, if you had to enter a static IP address, you could certainly do those types of things. And we'll hit next. Same thing for vSAN. Again, we're just going to keep it simple. But if you had to configure static IPs and so forth, you could certainly do that here. There's some other features and functionality that can be enabled or disabled as needed. Again, there's admission control. For vSphere HA, notice that it's enabled by default. Keep that enabled. That's an important setting.
Yeah.
A few other things too, from a vSAN perspective, you can see deployment type is single site. If I wanted to do a stretch cluster here though, I could configure that. I could turn on deduplication and compression. Encryption is an option there as well. Quite a few different things we can configure, and scrolling clear down at the bottom, then a few other items. There's that time, NTP, there's that enhanced vMotion capability. All kinds of things here that normally you would probably, at least for a lot of these, you would set on a per host basis. We're going to do this for the entire cluster at once, which is great. The other thing we're going
to
do
beauty,
too,
right? Because it is consistency, not wondering what the settings are. That's to me, this is the real beauty of this, is being able to set this at a cluster level.
Yeah, exactly. Number one, it's fewer clicks. Number two, you're getting a more consistent configuration across the board there. And when you have consistency in your cluster, that's going to lead to better performance and uptime. It's really that simple. So this is a great feature. All right, for vSAN, we need to claim both cache drives and capacity drives in each of the hosts. Again, vSAN is going to make a pretty educated decision on that. This is a nested environment, so if you're wondering why the amount of capacity is pretty small for these drives, again, similar to Pete's environment too, we're using virtual disks underneath the hood. If these were physical drives, you would see some other stuff here. In this case, vSAN did a good job of guessing what goes where. So it knows to create a couple of disk groups on each host. It's going to use one of the devices, the smaller device, for cache, and the other two devices for capacity. So we'll go ahead and hit next here. No need to change that up.
Yeah, and Jeff, that does come up a lot about, you know, so multiple disk groups as a recommendation. And so this is something that vSAN automatically determines is the best for performance, and so that it automatically does that for you. Is that what happened right there?
Yeah, I mean, you could do just one disk group on each host if you wanted to, but the recommendation from VMware is to do at least two disk groups. And in this particular case, we had enough drives to do that. So the cluster quick start allowed us to kind of set that up, or kind of recommended that actually.
Nice.
Moving on to step number six here, you can see the option to create fault domains. That's probably another good topic for a podcast another time, to dig into fault domains, especially now that we have an option for nested fault domains. So again, teasing a future episode here a little bit, perhaps. But anyway, we only have three hosts in this particular cluster, so we really don't have the option to do fault domains. You need quite a few hosts for that. So we'll just hit next, keep the defaults there. We get a summary and see everything's ready to go. Green check marks, good, good, good. Hit finish. The other nice thing about the click-through demos is you don't have to wait for this configuration. And in a real environment, you would have to kind of set there as things get configured and so forth. With the click-through demos, you can see pretty quickly exactly what happened and move on to the next step. So that saves you some time too. I love these things. So there's the summary there. We can see that vSphere HA is enabled. DRS is enabled. You hit configure. Now, what happens if you want to add additional capacity? Here's another nice thing you can do too with cluster quick start, is not only set up the cluster initially, but you can go through and you can add hosts too. So I'm going to move to this pretty quick. It's very similar to what we just showed you with setting up the cluster initially, but to add a host is a very similar process here. Now, the difference being we don't have to go back through and configure the networking and time and DNS and VLANs and all that kind of stuff. It's going to use what we configured initially when we first set the cluster up. It's simply going to configure the same settings for the new host that's being brought in. So we hit finish. And then after a few moments, that host is added to. You can see here we have four hosts. We hit configure. We can see that information. As I just mentioned, there's the disk claiming piece again.
Yep.
Fault domains, ready to complete. And like I said, it takes all of the settings from before and applies it to that new host. You can see the host was in maintenance mode there just a moment ago. Now you see the four. Hit summary. And we've just increased compute and storage capacity in a matter of just a few moments there on that particular cluster. So that's just one of the many demos that are out there on storagehub.vmware.com.
Yeah, and so that's the cool thing about these demos, right? You have access to them. You don't have to play with your own environment if you're not sure and you want to see how they work. So that's a good thing. But if you don't even have an environment, it's also another way to get access to that. So go to storagehub.vmware.com and start playing with those different ones. That's very cool. Jeff, thank you for sharing that. Now, gentlemen, this is cool. I told you we had some questions, and some of the questions came from a gentleman by the name of Bilal Ahmed, and he's actually going to join the call with us right now, and he's going to ask some of the questions. So give me a second, and let's get this gentleman on the call, and then we can walk through some of these settings with Bilal. Bilal, is that you? You there?
Yes, that's me. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well, doing well. We're over here just nerding out on the podcast, talking about vSphere settings and how they pertain to vSAN, all that good stuff. And I saw some of your questions come in, and so I thought we could get you on the call, and maybe the experts, we could walk through some of the answers.
Yeah, absolutely. Perfect. I was hoping you'd do something like this because I know vSAN, I've used it a bit here and there, but I'm actually in the process of configuring it all in my home lab. So I've been asking around a few questions, but I thought since you guys were doing this, who better to ask?
Yeah, you got the experts over here. Mr. Jeff Hunter is he's one of the most authoritative sources as it comes to vSAN architecture, and of course you know John, so yeah. I think we can I think we got it.
Pete, don't sell yourself short. You're a pretty smart cat too when it comes to this vSAN stuff.
Thank you, Jeff. All right, what do you got for us, Bilal?
Basically, so at the moment I have a hybrid cluster and I've added two compute nodes to it as well. And then obviously once I have the money, I'm going to go all flash. Now my question is, what's the process now in 6.7 from migrating from a hybrid array, a hybrid set, to a full all flash?
So I can take this one. So the first step is basically remove the disk groups and you go through one at a time. So from this, you would go to the configure tab under vSAN. You'd click on disk management. Within the disk groups, there's actually an option to remove the entire disk group. It's this little three hard drives with a red X icon. Okay. And then under that, you would select full disk migration. And you know, as the migration mode, click yes. And that's basically going to eject those. So then at that point, you would go to that host and you do this one host at a time, not obviously do this on all of them simultaneously because then you have no storage. And so you do need to make sure you have some swing capacity for this, which you should, you know, always need slack space for rebuilds. So you remove the physical hard drives from the host. You'd add the flash drives to the host. The one gotcha is you may have to delete the partition if you're reusing the same cache device.
Right. Okay.
You can also do that within the UI now. There's actually a delete partitions on that disk. And roll through that. This is actually, this is documented now, I think now on VMware Docs. Anthony Spiteri, a good friend of the podcast, he actually did a blog series where he did a full process of rolling through. And he even went, I think he also did an upgrade at the same time. It's a good read.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, because I was thinking about it. What you say sounds very similar to what my thought process was going to be. Well, I thought I'd just ask you guys to make sure that I've got it right in my mind as to how it's going to go.
Well, and one thing to think about is since you're already kind of taking all the disks out of a host, you might just go ahead and throw that host in maintenance mode. And at the same time, if you have any patches you need to do, you need to upgrade versions, maybe, you know, patch BIOS or firmware or other things. You know, now's a good time that you've got that host and you're kind of messing with that host to go do any other upgrades. Take it a step further. You don't have to put the whole host in maintenance mode, but if you want to just go ahead and do your other, you know, house cleaning.
So Jeff, one of the other questions that came in, I think maybe you can take this one, is around the resynchronization and rebuild details and how to force those if you need to. So if we need more context, you know, Bilal, great. We have, and it's Bilal, right? Is it Bilal? Or?
So
Bilal's here, so he can add some context. But it seems to me like this is more of a question around like, if I don't want to wait the default timer for objects to rebuild, or if I want to actually force these off, then what's the easiest and most efficient way to do that?
Yeah, Pete. So there is an option to go ahead and force a resync rather than waiting for the default 60 minutes. So it might make sense to take just a moment and talk about that real quick, because some folks still have confusion, especially if they're newer to vSAN when it comes to that. So for example, if you put a host in maintenance mode, you'll see that the availability is reduced a little bit. So you might get like a little yellow exclamation point. It'll say something to the effect that... I forget exactly what it says in the UI, to be honest with you. But basically what's going on there is there's a 60-minute timer that is waiting to rebuild the second copy of those components on another host. And that's a good thing. We don't necessarily want to start doing rebuilds, you know, especially if you're just doing a quick host reboot or whatever. We want to wait and make sure that the host is actually down for a while. So that's why we wait 60 minutes, in case you're wondering why 60 minutes. Usually reboots and maintenance and that type of thing will get done much faster than 60 minutes. So we wait a little bit of time to see if the host is truly down out before we start a more expensive rebuilding process. Now, that said, there are cases where it does make sense to get that process started sooner than later. So what you can do, Pete, I don't know if you still have your environment up there. Maybe we can switch back to the UI and
show that. Let me jump
to
that real quick. Hold on. Can you see?
No, you'll need to share.
Oh, I should probably share it, huh? That would probably be helpful. Yeah, let's go with that option. All right.
Yeah, so with the cluster selected in the navigation pane on the left there, you can go to monitor.
All right.
And then down there toward the bottom underneath vSAN, you'll see resyncing objects.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Now, in this case, you don't see much here because your cluster is healthy. There's nothing in maintenance mode. There's nothing that's failed or whatever the case might be. But if you look over toward the right-hand side, it's kind of grayed out. You can see where it says resync now. That would be lit up in the case where there's an option to do that. So you could force that resync as opposed to waiting the 60 minutes by default or whatever the case might be. So it's pretty simple.
Okay,
nice.
Cool.
I like it.
So I have just a curious question. Whenever I see things like 60 minutes, I always wonder, is there a way to ever adjust that? I'm not saying that you ever would, but the curiosity always piques me about things like that.
So typically, I can answer that. Typically, and you can actually see that on the monitor tab there, it does say 60 minutes. If you go to configure, if we go back to the recent object.
Right, go to configure.
Yeah, if you go to configure and under vSAN, click services. This showed up here. It used to be an advanced setting. It's now configured globally here across the host. If you go to advanced options, you can see the object repair timer.
Okay.
Now, what I have seen some customers do is if someone has a really big host, maybe they've got some hybrid nodes with some really big drives, or maybe they've just stuffed, 90 terabytes worth of flash into a host. You should obviously, consider how long it takes to drain hosts and evacuate hosts and things like that. I've seen some customers that maybe their operations teams, when they do patching, some of the lifecycle stuff, they do it by hand or something barbaric and it takes extra long. I've actually seen people raise it. Obviously, you can lower this, but the reason why we have that 60 minutes is that's if someone accidentally reboots a host or does something, or someone leaves the host in maintenance mode for a little while, it doesn't just go ahead and just start throwing data everywhere. That can be set lower, obviously. I've seen people set it higher. Be aware, though, that if you have a hard failure, so we know that a drive is dead, and that means we get what's called a physical device loss. We get a SCSI sense error code that says, this thing's dead. It's not coming back. We're going to go ahead and initiate a rebuild immediately. But if a host just kind of floats off and disappears, or maybe a drive controller hangs and just the drives mysteriously disappear, they might come back. There's actually some things, particularly within the dying device handling or degraded device handling service, where it tries to go bring, say, a controller back, reboot it, force power on resets, things like that. So we don't want to trigger rebuilds when there's still maybe some things we can do to get that stuff back. And the best rebuild is the one you don't have to do. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, Bilal, I appreciate your questions. And gentlemen, we're winding up the episode here, but I did want to end with some good questions. Again, great resources on storagehub.vmware.com. That's where we've got a lot of our FAQs. We've got our white papers. We've got, like we talked about earlier, our offline demos, our click-through demos. And just a lot of great information. Bilal, for you asking these good questions and joining the conversation, I've got a free copy, an e-copy of the vSAN Deep Dive book. So I'll be sending that to you, my friend. So congratulations on that.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, guys.
Yeah, man. And I want to thank you for joining us. Jeff, I also want to thank you for joining us on the podcast and providing all this great information. That was a wealth of information. John, before we land this plane, do you have anything for our guests?
I need caffeine. Please send caffeine.
All right. Well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Jeff and Bilal for joining us on The Last Minute. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now. All right, gentlemen, that was fun, man. This is the first video demo/podcast. We'll see how that goes. I think that was pretty cool.
That was an MBO, right, Pat? That was one of your MBOs, right, Pete?
Yes, do a video podcast.
Well, thanks for having us on, guys.
Thank you, sir.
That
Enjoy
was
the
great.
Rest of your day.
So, Pete, I take it you didn't get studio time, right? Is this a plan B?
See?
Pretty much.
Enough of this jibber jabber.